Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk, 201-939-4513. That's the phone number if you want to get in touch with us and talk some Giants football. Also, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We can communicate that way as well. Lance, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How's things with you?
Everything's good, and I guess we should hit our first bit of news first. The Giants did announce a roster move today. Nothing that's going to, you know, be mind-boggling or going to make the back pages or anything like that. They signed another undrafted free agent, young cornerback Matt Smalley from Lafayette College. And perhaps even the bigger surprise than them bringing in Matt Smalley is the guy that they cut, someone that played significant time for the Giants last year, Juan Unga.
Yeah, Unga actually got the start in game one last season as a result of all the injuries, played against the Dallas Cowboys, and was certainly utilized in the mix of the linebackers last season. But they're essentially replacing one undrafted free agent with another one because Unga did make the team. He was undrafted. He was on the practice squad the year before, so he wasn't straight out of college. But you can see the Giants are continuing to add more and more depth, John, to that cornerback position. And remember, that was something that Jerry Reese spoke about. I remember when he was on WFAN with Mike Francesa right after the draft, he said that was a position that we went into the draft and even after the draft saying to ourselves, you can never have enough depth at that position. And now they're obviously taking their chances out of Matt Smalley, who was out of the Patriot League. He was a defensive specialist. He was also a return guy. So, yeah, some versatility there.
And they did do some work with their undrafted free agents, bringing in some cornerbacks to add some depth back there. We talked about how there simply weren't that many guys on the roster. I mean, at this point in time, you can sometimes have as many as 10 or 11 or 12 even cornerbacks on your roster, and you can cut that down to six or so by the time you get to your final cuts. A couple stats from him from Lafayette College. Again, this is Patriot League, guys, so you have to take everything and all these numbers with a grain of salt, obviously. 42 games in four seasons, 30 starts, so that probably makes him a three-year starter, I'd say. He was credited with 175 tackles, intercepted seven passes, had 32 passes defended, four sacks, two forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery, and had a 24.8-yard return average on 48 kickoff returns. As Lance mentioned, had two touchdowns, one a 99-yarder. So a productive player in college, and the Giants simply continue to add some young depth to this roster, which, of course, adds the competition down the stretch.
Yeah, and that's the name of the game right now. Remember, the rosters, they can go to 90 as you get into training camp, so there's flexibility to continue to add as many players as they want throughout the course of the next few months. And then you're obviously looking for, you know, what could build up your depth chart. And that's exactly what I think the Giants are targeting right now. You know your main three at corner with Eli Apple and Janoris Jenkins and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. The question is, you know, who's going to be that fourth corner? Who's going to be that fifth corner and so forth? And, you know, one of these guys could very well be in the mix who was undrafted right out of college.
Yeah, you never know when one of these guys steps up and surprises you, but they'll have the chance to show in OTAs, in the offseason workout program, what they can do. We thank you for joining us on Twitter, everybody. If you want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com right now. And this is going to be the first day of kind of a three-day projects process. I mean, it was a little strong. But for the next 3 days, we're going to take a look at what the other three NFC East teams have done in the draft, where they are currently, to kind of get a feel for the division moving forward. We'll do it again. We'll do all our opponent matchups too in July. We did that last year, previewing the season, talking to a reporter from each team the Giants will play this season. But we figured it would be a good idea to touch base with each one of these are three guys that cover the opposing teams in the division. We'll have Mickey Spagnuolo in a minute. We'll have Dave Spadaro on the Eagles tomorrow. And then we're trying to get Larry Michael, who does play-by-play for the Redskins for Friday. So that'll be the next three shows. We'll keep each guy for 10, 15 minutes, whatever. You know, get a feel for where their teams are. And then we'll take your calls, of course, at 201-939-4513. The draft, free agency, the team, predictions, whatever you got, we can talk about it here on Giants.com. And, you know, last year, the division continues to be topsy-turvy, Lance, and a team hasn't won back-to-back division titles in the NFC East, I think, in, what, 10 years, something like that?
Yeah, since the Eagles did it.
Since the Eagles
did
it.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, a long time ago. So all these teams are really trying to figure out exactly where they are in this division, because it really has been unpredictable the last few years. And now we are joined by our good friend of the program from DallasCowboys.com. There's a lot of other stuff down there as well. That's our good buddy Mickey Spagnola. Mickey, you got John and Lance today up in New York. How are you today?
Just fine. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Now, you guys have your golf outing today, so we won't keep you that long, Mick. But to call it an eventful offseason for the Cowboys, I think would probably be an understatement, and I guess we'll start with the draft, and we'll start with the first-round pick. A lot of people undervalue the running back position these days. Obviously, the Cowboys think otherwise, given the structure of their roster.
Well, I don't know that they think otherwise about the running back position. They just thought otherwise about the guys they took.
Okay.
Who was a special running back, Ezekiel Elliott. And I don't know if it wasn't Ezekiel Elliott that they would have said, well, we're going to take a running back. But when you get a guy that's special, I think these were the words Stephen Jones used about 10 times when talking about him after the draft was over. He used special and unique. And like I said, if he used it once, he used it 100 times about Ezekiel Elliott. So I think this had more to do with Ezekiel Elliott than it had to do with saying, oh, we just need a running back so we can get back to playing football the way we did. And I think a lot of people misunderstood just how good they think this guy is, and he's a difference maker. And so that's why they went ahead and did it, you know, did that. And if you think about it, from a financial standpoint, what he's going to end up making this year or for his contract, the four-year deal, is going to be very similar to what they offered DeMarco Murray. Now, unfortunately, and I don't know if it was for the Cowboys or DeMarco Murray, Philadelphia, you know, gave him twice as much. And so he had no other choice but to do that, and it didn't turn out so well. So, again, undervalue, I don't know that they undervalue the position. They understand how important it is. It's just to make sure you have the right guy there.
Well, Mickey, you mentioned about the Cowboys trying to get back to that style of play, and I'm sure you're referring to 2014 when DeMarco Murray was the running back, and they pounded the football. They won time of possession. They also kept their defense off the field. So there's a lot of chatter that they're trying to mimic 2014 all over again. I'm curious your thoughts on whether or not that can be achieved with what they've brought in. And number two, how concerning, though, is the defense right now, considering that was a primary need last season, or a primary issue, I should say?
Well, let's look at it this way. They've got a running back who's going to run for touchdowns. And that's something the Cowboys haven't had all that often since Emmitt Smith retired. So it's not about the yards. To me, it's not about the yards. It's not about time of possession. It's about scoring touchdowns. And if you compare last year's offensive output without Tony Romo and Dez Bryant to what they did in 2014, they nearly scored 200 points less last year.
Wow.
So to me, it's about touchdowns. And Ezekiel Elliott, and I know this is in college football, but he did play at a pretty good level at Ohio State. In his 3 years there, and he didn't play all that much his freshman year, he scored 43 touchdowns. To me, that's phenomenal. And so this is about getting the ball back in the end zone. And, you know, you can say what you want, but without Tony Romo there, the running game was okay. It wasn't great. But with Tony Romo, Dez Bryant on the field, I guarantee you, and this guy, the running game will be better. Now, as for the defense, yeah, they did need to get better. But I went back and looked, and all they gave up last year compared to 2014 was 1.4 points a game more. So the defense wasn't that bad as it was, you know, compared to the year before. It was the fact that they just didn't score any points, and they were always in these close games, and the defense couldn't shut things down. Did they need to get better at the defensive end spot? Yes, they did. They didn't plan on the suspensions or the upcoming suspensions they're facing there. They did need to get better there. They've made some minor adjustments. We'll see how those things turn out. But, again, sometimes you play better defense when your team's averaging 29 points a game because the other team can't play cozy offense and say, oh, we don't have to score very much because they're not going to score anything. And so I think when teams have to take chances, that might increase help increase the number of turnovers you end up getting.
Well, and joined by Mickey Spagnola, DallasCowboys.com, talking about taking chances, Mickey. Leave it to Jerry Jones to go with Jalen Smith in round number two. Heading into the draft, you know, you talk to people around the league, and, you know, in the end, who knows what anybody really does know when he was going to go if the Cowboys didn't pick him in round two. There's been a lot of talk about, well, the Cowboys doctor did the surgery. They must know something. What's your impression here? What was the thought process? I know they wanted that Ogba kid. He went off the board before they picked in the second round. That's why they went with Jalen Smith. They tried to trade up for Paxton Lynch. Why did they eventually land on Jalen Smith? And what is the real prognosis inside the organization on when he can be ready and when he is ready, if he's going to be the same guy?
Yeah, I think they were trying to do three things before they took Jalen Smith. And you mentioned the first one. They tried to trade up into the first round and take Paxton Lynch. Denver ended up giving Seattle more than the Cowboys were willing to offer. Plus, they were trading a first-round pick, which kept Seattle in the first round. If they traded with the Cowboys, they would have been out of the first round and wouldn't have been able to have the rights to the player they took first in the draft for 5 years. Then they tried it. They certainly would have liked it. Ogba, he went. Dodd went. And they tried to trade down. Well, whoever they were trying to trade down with was asking for too much. And so they said, well, you know what? We were going to trade down and take Jalen Smith. We'll just take him right here. Is it a stretch? Yeah, absolutely. But it's one of those risk-reward things. And you know Jerry, he's big on that. You know, high risk, high reward, right? And, you know, they just felt and people will say, well, why didn't they take Miles Jack? Well, here's the deal. They feel better about Jalen Smith's nerve in his knee regenerating than they did about the longevity of Miles Jack's knee. The things I heard was he's going to eventually need microfracture surgery. So how long is that career going to last? So they're betting on the nerve more so than the cartilage in Jack's knee. So that's kind of what the thinking was there. Now, as for them knowing more than anybody else, I don't know, because if you think about it, the surgery that Dr. Cooper did, he didn't do that for the Cowboys. He did that for the individual client.
Right.
So I would imagine everybody had the same information. Now, could they get a little bit more intimate details from Dr. Cooper? I would imagine so. But still, everybody has the same information. I mean, if I'm the agent, I want all the teams to know exactly what the doctor thinks, especially if he's positive about the thing. So they can do, though, is continue the rehab with the surgeon, you know, near, and just see what happens. Now, before the draft, my understanding was that he was probably going to need a redshirt year, and he's probably going to need a redshirt year. They're very familiar with nerves when they're damaged and how long it takes to refire. And, you know, normally what doctors will tell you is that nerve regenerates about an inch a month. So depending on how long that nerve is that he damaged in his knee, who knows? If it's 6 inches, it'll take 6 months. So they're well aware of that. They were willing to take that risk. And I think a lot of people jump to conclusions when Jerry said last week that they weren't going to put him on injured reserve. And I'm sorry if you can hear the planes coming over, but they're landed pretty low here by the golf course.
Understandable.
At DFW, yeah. Anyway, they felt like if they put it, he'll end up on non-football injury, right, to start the season. And that gives you 6 to 12 weeks. So they can stretch waiting for that nerve to refire for at least 12 weeks of the season. And then you get to that point, you say, okay, do I put him on the roster or do I put him on IR for the rest of the season? Well, they did that last year with Chaz Green, and at the last moment, when the 12 weeks were up, they put him on the 53-man roster so he could kind of get a feel for practicing with the team. So that's what they're gambling on. When he said, we're not going to place him on IR, I think everybody said, oh, they think he can play. No, they're just going to extend the time that he can rehab with the possibility that if something goes really well, that he would be available to play.
talking with Mickey Spagnuolo, DallasCowboys.com. Well, Mickey, one thing you could say is the Dallas Cowboys could use some additional pass rushers that are actually going to play this season and impact this defense. And, you know, Jalen Smith, as you mentioned, still very much a question mark. But when you look at the numbers last season, and, you know, you noted there wasn't a difference in terms of points allowed so much between 14 and 15. But when you look at 14 and 15, you know, the sacks piling up was not very high for Dallas. Bottom five last season. They did take Charles Tapper in round four. What is your thought on the Cowboys' pass rush as the roster looks right now? Do you anticipate perhaps a free agent or two could be added? I mean, what's the status of this pass rush right now?
Yeah, I think they'll certainly keep their eyes open, especially for the first 4 weeks of the season when they know Randy Gregory, who was a projected starter at right defensive end, will be serving his four-game suspension. And they're, you know, bracing for the fact that DeMarcus Lawrence is going to have to spend be suspended for four games. So, you know, like I said, they did minor things in the draft. When you take a fourth-round pick, Charles Tapper, when you sign a restricted free agent that the Raiders didn't match, Benson Mayowa. And then you've got guys that played inside that can help play outside to try to hold down the fort. They really need their third and fourth-round picks to be players, not maybe starters, but players in the rotation right off the bat. And that includes Malik Collins, the defensive tackle from Nebraska. So if they can get those guys to give them something and just have a combination. See, the thing you got to realize from a sack standpoint, last year they ended up with 31 sacks. That was only three more than they had the previous season when they went 12-4. The difference was the takeaways. You know, they finished second in 2014 in takeaways, and this past year, you know, I think I could have counted them all on two hands. So that was the huge difference. Now, did the takeaways come from the pass rush? Probably a little bit. Did the takeaways come from the fact that they were scoring 29 points a game and teams were having to take chances to try to catch up? I think that had a lot to do with it.
Good point.
Also. So, yeah. So, again, I know the focus is on their defense, but if this offense can get back to what they were doing in 2014 or even better, then I still think they'll be difficult to deal with.
Last question, Mickey, for me on the draft, and I want to just get an overall picture from you too. Dak Prescott, how quickly do the Cowboys think he can develop into that backup quarterback? Is it going to be Kellen Moore? Will they bring somebody else in? Backup quarterback situation. And then is there anybody in the final two rounds, they had a lot of sixth-round picks, the Cowboys, that you're really keeping your eye on that you think could be a factor?
Well, from the quarterback standpoint, you know, I've been told that the plan all along, even if they draft this quarterback high, was to get in another veteran quarterback and have him compete with Kellen Moore, and then the winner is the backup quarterback to start the season, and then they would see how quickly maybe a draft pick would develop. So
okay.
I don't think that's changed. I know Jerry Jones said Kellen Moore is their backup, but, you know, a lot of times when you say things like that publicly, you know, you're kind of positioning yourself in free agency, so you don't have to overpay somebody if you bring in another veteran. So, to me, and Stephen Jones had basically said it the week before that, you know, they would like to bring in a veteran to compete with Kellen Moore. I still think that's the plan. And if you think about it, I mean, how many quarterbacks were taken in the draft high? Seven, eight, something like that? That means there's going to be seven or eight quarterbacks that were on rosters last year that are going to get released.
Yeah.
So there's going to be another round of free agency for veteran quarterbacks, I think. So I still look for them to do that. They'll take, you know, however much time it is for Dak Prescott. If he's phenomenal and he's ready in 2 months, then fine. You know, let him have the backup job. But as I try to tell people, to think a rookie is going to come in and go through two mini camps, OTAs, and basically a training camp when Tony Romo, coming back from his injury, is going to need all the snaps he can get after only playing four games. And that guy's going to be ready the second quarter or the second game of the season to go in and save the day. I think you're whistling Dixie. So, again, let that guy develop at his own pace. I don't think there's a rush. And then see where it goes with either Kellen Moore or bringing in a veteran guy. As for the the sixth round, obviously, the gathering is pretty interesting. The fact that you know, they rolled the dice on him, and I think that's, you know, as I said, rolling the dice on a basketball player. But, you know, they've done that before, and it's paid dividends. So we'll see where it goes with that. The cornerback they selected, and I'm away from my notes, and it's
Anthony Brown, Purdue.
Anthony Brown, that's what I thought it was. I think they're pretty high on him. They had a pretty high grade on him, higher than the sixth round. So to get him in the sixth round, you know, there's going to be some good competition on this team for the fifth, sixth cornerback spot. And I think if he is what they think he is with his size and speed ratio, I think he's got a chance to be able to make the difference.
Mickey, you alluded to Tony Romo. Orlando Scandrick is another notable name on that defense who missed last season. In terms of those two in particular, who were integral parts of both the offense and the defense, you know, what are they expecting out of both of them, at least with the start of training camp? What's the outlook for both of those players entering this offseason?
And, you know, Mickey, Mickey, real quick, throw Dez Bryant in the mix there, coming off the broken foot.
Sure. I think they expect Tony Romo and Dez Bryant to be 100% by the time they hit training camp. Romo's been out doing things during the OTAs when they do their strength and conditioning and whatever they're allowed to do as a unit. He's been taking part of that. And by the way, this is the first offseason he's been able to do those things in 3 years, if you think about it. So he's pretty fired up about being out there with the guys at this point. He's throwing. He's been throwing. Remember, it was his left shoulder. I've seen him in the racquetball court, and he's playing racquetball. And for therapy, he's playing left-handed so he can get used to moving his left shoulder. So from that standpoint, I think they feel like he's fine. And the thing I think everybody needs to remember about his surgery that he had on the collarbone is they didn't go in to repair anything. They went in to do a preventive measure to shave down the length of the corner of the collarbone so that if you fall on it, it doesn't drive into your shoulder socket the way it has the past two times it was fractured. So they shaved down about a half an inch of the collarbone to create more room. So, again, it's not like he's got to recover from something that was broken or strained or torn. He's recovering from basically just the surgery of violating whatever muscles you have to go through to get there. Dez Bryant's bouncing around the ranch, good as new. I don't know how much they'll let him do in the OTA. See, what happened with the first surgery is he pushed it too hard. He tried to do too much too soon. He was told to stay off it for a length of time, and you got to tie Dez down. You got to put him in a seatbelt because he can't sit still. And he's doing a better job this offseason of doing the rehab they want him to do. And so they'll take the time with him. I don't know how much he'll do, but he's out there doing all the strength and conditioning work that everybody else is doing. As for Lando Scandrick, his rehab also from the torn ACL is going fine. They'll kind of be cautious with him during OTAs and mini camp, but I think by the start of training camp, that's the goal, to have him ready to go. The only guy that I think would be iffy for the start of training camp would be Lance Dunbar. And he's sort of the guy that's just kind of been lost in this whole injury shuffle. Because if you remember, before he tore his knee up in that game against New Orleans, he was a pretty integral part of that offense. And just dumping the ball to him, you know, it was Brandon Whedon's safety valve, and it was working awfully well. So what happened with him, not only did he tear his ACL, but he tore his patellar tendon.
Ooh.
So this was the fourth game of the season. So the next week, the surgery they did was to repair the patellar tendon, but they didn't repair the ACL until that kind of healed up, and that was like the first week in December.
Oh, okay.
So again, now the ACL, he's probably going to start training camp on PUP, and then, you know, they can buy the 6 weeks and see where that ends up, but they'd certainly love to have him available. It just, again, you know, we don't know how long Mother Nature takes to heal these things.
Yeah, Mickey, final question, and we'll have you on again in July to kind of preview the season with
sure.
us. So I guess my final one for you, a lot of times people assume that the Dallas Cowboys have a really bad cap situation, and moving forward they're going to have trouble re-signing all these offensive linemen, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What is the long-term picture right now in terms of the Cowboys' cap situation moving forward? Are they going to be able to re-sign? I know Frederick, they just extended the 1 year. You know, Frederick and Martin, are they going to be able to keep this group together, do you think, long-term?
Well, I think that's the plan, and that's why you don't see them, and excuse me for saying this, $70 million on a free agent this offseason. They will try to do a long-term deal with Frederick to reduce his cap for this year, which is like $9 million, or for next year, $9 million, and get that to a reasonable amount on a long-term deal. They aren't sitting here and going, oh, now we got to sign Zach. Oh, now we got to sign this guy. They got Tyron Smith already signed. They know at some point they're going to have to budget for Lael Collins. He's not going to be making minimum like he is right now. So, yeah, they'll do what they need to do. Of all the work and trouble they did to build that offensive line, I don't see them yeah. sitting there letting it fall apart. It's going to be a priority, and that's why they didn't spend – you know, a $50 million contract on a defensive end that they thought they would be overpaying. So, they're planning ahead. If you think about it, the contract they're giving Ezekiel Elliott as a running back at 20 years old, by the way, you know, is far less than what people were paying for running backs in free agency at 24, 25, 26 years old. Dez Bryant's already signed for the long term, and what they need to do is keep regenerating the bottom of the roster by drafting well, and that's one thing that they've got to do better in, like, the fourth, fifth, sixth rounds that they probably haven't done as well as they would like to. But from a cap standpoint, you know, this year they still got $11 million available, and then we'll see as it goes over the next years. And remember, I saw somebody tweeting me wanting to know, oh, they're $3 million under already next year. No one knows what next year is going to be. No one knows what the cap is going to be next year. And they can always continue to reduce Tony Romo's contract, which was, I think the base next year is about $15 million. So they'll be fine and going forward. So, again, I think the big thing this year heading forward is can they get the guys back, stay healthy, and get back to scoring the amount of points they did in 2014.
Mickey, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you in July. Enjoy the golf today, my friend.
Thanks, Mickey. Appreciate
it. Okay, thanks. Beautiful day out here. See you guys.
Yeah,
right,
take it
you
easy.
Got it.
You can send some of that good weather up here. Though it has gone better the last couple
today.
Of days.
Yeah.
But interesting stuff there. And, of course, the Jalen Smith thing is really the interesting thing. And I thought, really, the funny thing that Mickey said that, you know, people on the outside looking in, and I didn't think about this either, so it was kind of made me think a little bit. You would think that Jalen Smith's doctor and Jalen Smith's camp would have given every team all the medical information they could have to try to get picked as high as possible. So then you wouldn't think Dallas would have any inside information, because why would he hold back and only give some information to Dallas but not give it to the other teams that might look to draft him? You know what I mean?
Well, he's trying to protect his reputation, too, as a doctor. So if he could do wonders on the client, then obviously it's only going to look good for future players.
Well, that with the doctor, I mean, Jalen Smith's agent is going to want
of course, he's
to give
want
that information.
Too.
And the doctor's going to give the agent the full report,
yeah.
right, you figure?
Because it's going to help out
right.
both parties.
Exactly. So I thought that was interesting. But honestly, it makes sense, and I never thought of it that way. 201-939-4513. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. One other thing we can play around with, folks, if you so desire, ESPN released some power rankings today. It was kind of like a pooling of all their, like, I think they called it a blue ribbon panel. And Dan Graziano happened to get the unenviable task of writing the blurbs. I saw him battling with fans on Twitter all day yesterday over where certain teams are ranked. He will be very clear that he did not rank the teams. He just wrote the blurbs. It was the panel that ranked the teams. And even though the Patriots are number one, Patriot fans were upset because his blurb about the Patriots wasn't as positive as they would have liked. But I think the Giants came in. Where would the Giants come in, 17?
To be honest
on
with you, I didn't
did
even
you
glance.
At it?
I know CBS Sportsline had one too. I don't think it was just ESPN. A bunch of the websites came out recently with rankings. I mean, I don't really put much stock or substance into any of these things, especially second week of May. but I did not notice. I think the majority of the rankings had the Giants within that 15 to 17 range, low mid-teens, if memory serves me correct, from just quickly glancing at it.
Here we go.
I think they were in that ballpark.
ESPN released post-draft power rankings. Here we go. And again, Dan Graziano wrote the blurbs here. Patriots 1, Panthers 2, Packers 3, Seahawks 4, Cardinals 5, Steelers number 6, Bengals number 7.
They were a playoff team last year.
Broncos 8, quarterback situation, who knows. Vikings number 9, they had a good year last year. And again, remember, they should have made the second round of the playoffs if their kicker didn't doink the...
Seattle, yes.
Off the upright.
Correct,
one.
Blair Walsh.
Exactly. Was that an extra point or a field goal?
That was a field goal.
That was a field goal, right? Yeah. That was the game winning field goal.
Was it an extra point? You know what? Now that you got me thinking about
it. I know it was the distance of an old extra point.
Yeah.
That's how close it was. But I don't remember if it was an extra point or a field goal. And, you know what? I think it was a winner. I think that was a game winning kick.
It would have to be a field goal then, right? I mean, it could have been an extra point, too, if they would have tied
it up.
But
look it up. I'm curious.
I'll look it up
now.
Yeah, for confirmation.
Vikings number 9, Chiefs number 10. They have Dallas all the way up at number 11, despite finishing 4-12 last year. Colts at 12, Raiders 13. Ravens 14, Jets 15, Redskins 16, Texans 17, Giants 18,
okay.
Bills 19, Falcons 20, Dolphins 21, Eagles 22, Jaguars, Lions, Bears, Rams 26, Saints all the way down to 27, which I know some people raise some eyebrows about.
It was a field goal, by the way.
It was a field goal,
yes,
right? But
right.
How long was it? 27 yards?
27,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right
Chip
there.
Chip shot, yep.
Yeah. Chargers number 28, Bucks 29, Titans 30, Niners 31, and then the Browns at 32. The Browns are going to be a bad football team this year.
That's why the Browns had an enormous amount of picks, because they need all the players they can get.
They are going to be
this
a
point.
Bad
they are,
football
They're revamping
team.
And rebuilding, and they are officially revamping and rebuilding, especially with all those free agents they lost.
Yeah, you talk about tearing it down before building it up.
Boy,
well,
yes.
They are. I'm not even sure if they're up to the build process yet.
Well, the foundation is being laid out. Whether or not the foundation is strong enough to hold the rest of the infrastructure remains to be seen. But that's at least what they're hoping for.
I think the rubble's still coming off the top of the house.
I think
it's still collapsing.
Well, they brought the rookies in, so there's some, you know, mortar being put down, you know, in the early stages of the bricks that are being laid here.
All right, folks, 201-939-4513. Let's get to the phones for the next half hour. It's all you. On the phones. Kashawn in Maryland, you're up first. Kashawn, I haven't talked to you in I don't know how long. How are you?
I know. Hello, John. Hello, Lance.
How are you?
How are you doing, Kashawn?
How you guys? Good. I miss you guys. Yeah, you guys have the show on noon, and I'm always working. Like, my lunch ends at noon, so today I'm like off.
That's an early lunch.
Yeah, so pardon me for a moment. I just want to vent a little bit.
No, go ahead.
I know you guys have talked about the draft, but I want to put my 2 cents in.
It's all yours.
I was so upset that Thursday night. I couldn't even see straight. I could not believe the Giants passed on Larry Tonsil, and here's why. Like, I understand there was a red flag with the video, but you have to trust your board, their board, and if they felt like he wasn't the highest rated player on their board, then maybe they need a new board. I mean, we've taken players in the past before that have had checkered paths. I know, like, Ahmad Bradshaw was a thief. I think he got caught stealing something. He ended up being a really good Giant for us.
Mario
Manningham had some issues, and we took him. And both of those players ended up being great players. And see, my sentiment is, if the Giants feel that they're this top-notch organization and you take a player that is a good player but might have, you know, a little bit of issues off the field, if you believe that you're such a good organization, you should think that you can, you know, straighten them out, put them around good people, get them involved in programs. But you had a franchise left tackle sitting right there, and with all our issues on the right side of the line, I just felt that I was just so upset that they passed up on him. Like, I just cannot believe that they did that.
Kashawn, real quick on that. I think if you just looked at the football grade, you're right. Laramie Tunsil's the pick there, and it's an easy decision. Of course, if you're just looking at football grades, Laramie Tunsil's not there when the Giants pick there either. So, so that's the first thing. The second thing, you mentioned a couple guys. Manningham, he got picked in the third round. Ahmad Bradshaw, he got picked in the seventh round. DeMondre Moore plummeted from the first round value in February to a third round pick in the third round, a guy that, you know, people were scared off of. Remember, it's not just off the field stuff. It's not just, you know, the fact that they picture him smoking weed in a gas mask. You know, that's not everything. There are things like football character? Do you think he's going to work hard? Do you think he's going to study? Do you think he's going to be diligent? Do you think he's going to make the most of his talents? Those are all things that go into the pot when you come up with this evaluation of a player. Now, again, you don't know, I don't know what the Giants had on him. I can tell you the way the Giants organization works. I would be surprised if that stupid picture and video on draft day significantly altered their opinion. They do work on these guys, and they had a good write-up on him anyway. So that was probably their opinion before that stuff even went down, if I had to guess. But again, you have to take that sort of stuff into consideration, because over the years, you know, even top 10, top 15 guys, you know, there are guys with a lot of talent that get picked in the top 10 or top 15, but because of, you know, mental issues, not working hard, and, you know, football character. There's off-the-field character, and then there's football character. And you need football character as much as you need physical ability, athleticism, you know, great work on tape. You need that as much as you need the other in order to be successful. And I think that, you know, was a lot of the issues that people, not just the Giants, had with Laremy Tunsil and why he dropped the way he did.
The only thing I'll add to Sean, a few things. Number one, you know, John Mara, after the season, made it very clear that, you know, they've taken a number of risks in the past, and they're not necessarily comfortable doing that again.
Especially not at number 10.
Yeah, so, you know, you want to take somebody that you know is going to get on the football field and produce day one, but you also want to know that they're going to be able to handle their business off the field. And I think that video of Tunsil threw a lot of teams off guard, especially if nobody really anticipated it was going to be thrown out there, you know, minutes before the draft. The other thing to take into consideration is, you know, there have been players like Will Hill who the Giants have given multiple chances, and then unfortunately that hasn't worked out. So, you know, that has to be a part of the conversation. And remember, when Jerry Reese talked about when they drafted Eli Apple, he made it very clear Eli Apple was the highest player on the board without taking into consideration some of the question marks. So that doesn't mean that they didn't have a high grade for Tunsil. That doesn't mean that they didn't value Tunsil. It goes back to the risk-reward type of management, where they wanted a player that had all the check marks day one. Apple fit that category compared to some of the other players.
And you want to have a clean player there, Kashawn. They always talk about having a clean player, especially that high. And Eli Apple checked all those boxes, even though maybe he didn't have that, you know, all-world physical upside that maybe some teams saw in Tunsil. Now, give me your rebuttal or whatever else you want to talk about.
Okay. All right, so fair enough. You know, I would have taken him, but I said that was a valid point that you guys made.
Absolutely. I hear you.
Reward, but,
I hear you. It's all good.
Okay, so going to the offensive line then, and because I've been reading articles, I know it might not be official, but I was hoping that Anthony Davis from the 49ers would be reinstated. I read an article yesterday that he's overweight, so it's looking like, you know, he might not go back to the NFL. So I think, unfortunately, we're probably going to have to put a temporary Band-Aid on the offensive line until next year, because I don't even know if the guard from Chicago, if he got re-signed or not. But I, it's unfortunate that we're probably going to be going into the season with a Marshall Newhouse, who, you know, those guys, the Marshall Newhouses and John Jerrys, they were brought in to be backups, not starters. And so it just seems like we're going to have to wait another year again to really get what we need on the offensive line. The second thing is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm catching up on my Giants news. People, I love what they did in round 2 to 6, by the way. And so when we're talking about Sterling Shepard, they're talking about, oh, yeah, he might be the starter. He might be the starter. He might be the number two. But the Giants, like 98% of the time, don't they just line up three wide anyway? So isn't it just a technicality as far as if you say that Sterling is the number two versus the number three? Because Cruz comes back healthy, I mean, they're all going to quote-unquote start anyway, right? So we shouldn't get caught up in who's the number two, number three.
Yes, correct. You are absolutely correct.
In this league, everybody lines up. The other thing I was going to throw out, because, Sean, you were alluding to Matt Slauson, who was released by the Bears. He was signed by the San Diego Chargers, so he is no longer on the market.
Okay. All right. Well, that
I didn't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but those are just the facts.
That's okay. Well, that's all I wanted to say. I mean, like, I know I'm very happy with the rest of the draft. There's a lot of promise. But that first night, like, I was so upset. But then he made up for it in rounds 2 through 6. And it seems like a lot of those players have great promise, great potential. And I just hope, for the love of God, that we can stay healthy. And I guess we'll figure it out during the off season. I'm still curious. I want to know if McAdoo is going to be calling plays. I hope he's not. I think he's going to have enough on his plate with just trying to make the transition from offensive coordinator to coach. But I'll be, you know, tuning in to see if he's going to call plays. But it was so good to talk to you guys, and great show. I listen to you guys every day, even though I don't call.
Well, appreciate that.
Thank you, Kishon.
Good hearing from you, Kishon. Thanks so much for weighing in. McAdoo has not made it clear as to what he's going to do. He has been asked this question multiple times, and he thinks it's more of a competitive edge type of thing, so he doesn't want to reveal, or he's in no position of comfort to reveal that. Keep in mind, though, he comes from that Green Bay school of thought where Mike McCarthy was both the head coach and the play caller, then he gave up those duties for about a year or two, only to take them back again this past season. So I think you can at least look at that. All right, he's coming from a system where the head coach slash offensive coordinator was the same person. Wouldn't surprise me if he handles both. It also wouldn't surprise me if he has Mike Sullivan provide the play calling, given Mike Sullivan, when he was with Tampa Bay, served that role as the offensive coordinator. I think he got two experienced coaches that can handle that task. I know a lot of people, and this is what Kishon was alluding to, you know, you want your head coach to just specifically be focused on the ins and outs of the games. If you got to challenge things, worry about the defense, the offense. But there are some guys that are so invested in the offense, such as McAdoo, they're so invested in the game plan during the week, you know, they want to continue to be tied to that during the game. So, I mean, I think there's pros to cons to both, but McAdoo certainly has not provided any hints as to what he's going to do.
No, and, you know, frankly, McAdoo's going to have a large hand in it, and even if Sullivan's the play caller, McAdoo's still going to listen to all the plays, and if he decides, no, hold on a second, I want to pass here instead of run, guess what? The team's going to pass instead of run. And I think Tom Coughlin had that power, too, when he was the head coach, but McAdoo was the offensive coordinator because Coughlin was an offensive guy. So I don't think he exercised it much, if at all, to be honest with you. I think he let Ben McAdoo kind of do his thing his last two years here, to be quite honest with you. But, look, I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's more interesting. In my opinion, I think it's very hard, especially for first-year coaches, to be the head coach and call plays. I think it's a challenge. I don't think it's easy. I think managing the game, managing your players, managing time, managing timeouts, your challenges, and just keeping yourself abreast of everything that's happening, I think is a full-time job. I think doing that while at the same time as calling plays, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's very, very hard. And I think you have to have other assistants there with you to help you with the other stuff. Because I do think it's hard to give your full attention to game management and do plays at the same time. And now, you have guys with head coaching experience here. You have Steve Spagnuolo, who's head coach, so he can help you out with a lot of time management stuff. You know, Tom Quinn's been here a long time. Obviously, Mike Sullivan's been an offensive coordinator before. So you have guys that have that sort of experience that can help. But I think that'll be an interesting decision. I don't know if Ben McAdoo's made it yet or not. My guess is that he has and he knows what he wants to do.
He just doesn't want to
reveal it. But he doesn't want to reveal it.
I don't blame him.
For competitive advantage.
Yeah.
Do I have any idea what the decision is? No. Frankly, I bet you the players don't even know what that decision is yet, to be honest with you. I think guys were throwing out some guesses earlier in the offseason, assuming things, but, you know, I don't think anybody knows.
Well, let's face it. The only player that has to know is Eli Manning, John. I mean, outside of that, the other guys, they just line up whatever play is being called. It's just Eli with the communication in terms of who he's getting the call from and so forth. I mean, that's the only player that I think it's priority number one to at least know maybe a little bit earlier than the rest. The other guys, they're going to get the play from Eli, line up, play football, and let the best team win.
Dex in Orlando. Dex, you're up next, pal.
Dex, you there?
Try Dex one more time. Dex?
Man, very few words today.
Dex
apparently.
Going twice.
Can you hear me?
We can now, Dex. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. I'm down here in Orlando. We got a big, huge crowd down here that support the Giants. I have two questions for you guys.
Dex, can you do me a favor before you continue? Can you lower? I'm hearing the computer or some other device in the background. If you could just turn that down so this way we
can
hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
That's good. Thank you, Dex.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Question on my two questions about the wide receivers on the undrafted. That Roger Lewis guy, I really think this guy is going to definitely make the team since we got rid of Ben Edwards now. I think Roger Lewis should fit into that role with the six guys that we have.
Well, you're talking about the wide receiver out of Bowling Green who they signed, and they brought in a number of other wide receivers as well. You know, he's not the only guy that was brought into the mix. A number of the undrafted free agents play that position, too. You mentioned he's taking Ben Edwards' spot. I mean, there's a few other guys if you want to play out the mathematics. But, you know, keep in mind, Ben Edwards was injured and also, you know, was not called up until the very end of the season when they had injuries. So I don't know necessarily whether there's going to be a great deal of wide open opportunities for all of these undrafted free agents to find spots. I mean, he's going to get his opportunities, but, you know, Sterling Shepard was just brought in. They're hoping, obviously, Victor Cruz returns to form, Dwayne Harris, Odell Beckham. Then you get to that maybe fifth or sixth wide receiver. There's going to be a lot of guys in the mix to fight for those spots.
That's the thing, Lance. Like, assuming Victor Cruz is healthy, you're going to have Victor Cruz obviously is on the roster. You have Sterling Shepard obviously on the roster. Beckham obviously on the roster. That's three. Dwayne Harris obviously on the roster. That four.
Jeremy Davis.
Jeremy Davis, the draft pick last year. He's in the mix. Jeremy Miles.
Miles White.
Miles White, who played last year, he's in the mix for that last spot.
Yeah.
And then you have a bunch of the young guys, the Dawboy kids, a lot of the undrafted free agents, guys like that. So, look, I think he'll be in the mix. If you look at a lot of the draft reports, you know, a lot of people thought he had the talent to be a mid-round pick. You know, some off-the-field stuff might have scared some people away. So, look, I think he'll have the opportunity. I think there is a wide receiver spot on this team that can be earned or two. I think there'll be a good competition, Dex, and I think that's a good guy to keep an eye on.
How many wide receivers do you think they're going to carry? Six?
I think six at most, but nice. I think there's a chance they just keep five. And if you keep six, though, your fifth and sixth guys are going to have to play special teams. So I don't know what his special team history is. I honestly haven't looked into that yet. But if you're going to be the sixth wide receiver on the team, you better play specials.
All right, second question.
Yep.
Melvin Lewis, the defensive tackle from Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
There's this potential. I mean, we got three definitely defensive tackles right now, right? With if you name Bromley, Snacks, and Hankins. So who's the fourth guy right now?
Well, I think they also brought in a number of undrafted free agents. You know, he's not the only guy that was brought into the mix. There's a number of other intriguing guys.
Milhouse, one of the guys they brought in.
I would throw out.
I think it's going to be between Milhouse and Lewis. Either one of them is going to make the team.
Remember, you also have Lewis Nix, who was a guy they brought in last year who was a second or third round pick
by the Texans a couple years ago. He never showed up. He hasn't shown nothing yet.
Well, he's a third round pick from the Texans.
Yes.
And then he was let go after his rookie year.
No, I'm not handing him a roster spot, but I think he's a guy that at least compete
familiarity
for a spot
with the
there.
Scheme and so
but,
forth.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you have the three guys that you know are on the roster in Hankins, Harrison, and Bromley. And then you'll probably keep one more for four. And then that'll probably be it. And frankly, I think that last defensive tackle spot is up for grabs. I think there'll be a great competition for it.
Well, here's another name I want to throw out. And I'm not saying that the percentage is high, but with Will Johnson, John, being brought into the roster.
Are you talking about Whitlock?
I'm just throwing it out there. If they wanted to make him a full-time defensive tackle because they don't want to keep two fullbacks.
You also have Montari Hughes, by the way, who played last year. He's a large man.
Holy macro.
Yeah, Montari Hughes is listed at 6'4", 350. If that guy's not 375, I'd be surprised.
Yes, well, he's the one that had the tip football late last season on a special teams play. So, there's a few guys in the mix. To answer your question,
but Paul, what's the deal with Whitlock? What are they going to do with Whitlock now?
Well, that's why I said. I said if Will Johnson, let's say, beats out Whitlock hypothetically, and they don't want to keep two fullbacks, Whitlock got some good reps at defensive tackle last season was productive.
And he got good pressure too. A lot of good pressure.
Correct. So I think it depends on how the roster plays out and how many snaps he gets on defense.
And here's the thing: in Whitlock's favor, he's an excellent special teams player. They love him on coverage units and on return units. Whitlock. They think he's a great special teams player. So if everything's even at the end, he might help himself making the team just based on his specials. Thanks for the call, Dex.
All right, you guys have a great day.
You too. All right, we got three callers left. You got 12 minutes. By the way, one of them is Charlie in Portland, Maine. He told me he has his draft review, and he tweeted me yesterday to warn me.
That's wonderful.
He wanted to know when I was on, because apparently he didn't want to do this to anybody else, which is obviously my loss, because now I have to listen to him. He wants to give us his draft dissertation, and we'll leave him
for last. I'm sure the entire audience is dying to hear what he has to say. One thing I wanted to throw out, he was asking about wide receivers, Dex. Don't overlook Darius Poe. Of all the undrafted guys, he's got a lot of size. You know, he comes from a good program, too. That, to me, if there's any undrafted wide receiver to look out for, I would have my eyes on Darius Poe, because I think from a physique standpoint, I think he's the best complement to the current wide receivers that are on the roster.
What are his numbers?
He's 6'3", 220, had a breakout season last year, 47 receptions, 560 yards, and then he had 8 touchdowns. That was tied for 8th in school history. But he's 6'3", 220. If you look at Cruz, Beckham, and Sterling Shepard, He, to me, is the best complement to that group compared to some of these other wide receivers.
Along with, say,
that.
Jeremy Davis is a bigger guy, too.
But I think you want some size to complement those three players.
I buy that.
So that's the only reason why I throw that name out. That doesn't mean he's going to make the roster. It's just if you're going to look for maybe an undrafted free agent that has a little bit more intrigue, maybe it's a guy that doesn't necessarily match the same measurements as the rest of the receiving group.
Yeah, Roger Lewis, 6'195", runs a 4.45. That's a guy that kind of is in that category with those other ones. T in Maryland. T, you're up next.
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. You know what? Since Charlie has to have a dissertation, I'm not going to be long. All I'm going to say is I hate those rankings. Like, I literally hate them. And it's so funny because I called Bob Papa this morning, and we were talking about it. And he, you know, actually, yeah, he had me on for a while. We were talking, going back and forth about him and why I don't like him. And he said, who would I move ahead of the Giants? I just hate him this early. Like, I couldn't even articulate how angry I was, like, reading it. And then the second point was, you know, and Lance, you probably don't remember, but I talked to Lance mid-season last year, and Lance and I went back and forth on the right side of the line, and we went back and forth about the linebackers. And I disagreed with Lance, and we agreed to disagree. I disagreed with Dan Graziano. He blocked me.
Well, I'm not going to block you, so don't worry about that. I'm still open-minded to allow you in the conversation.
Well, T, I have some friendly advice for you. Do you know what power rankings mean on May 10th?
Zippo.
They mean nothing, John. Like
exactly. Zero. So why are you getting upset? You look at them, you read them, you take them with a grain of salt. They're entertainment for 5 minutes of your day. Then you move on, and you relax, and you say, you know what? We're not going to know how good any of these teams are until the first week of September when they actually play in a real game. So power rankings don't mean a damn thing, T. Don't sweat them. It's all good.
I know, man. All I have to say is, man, yo, if I was single, I would marry Rashawn because she knows her football, man. Like, oh, my God.
Love is in the air on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
I appreciate it. Thanks, T.
All right, T. Appreciate
have
the phone call.
Guys.
Yeah, you got it.
And T's in Maryland, too, so T's got
the
local factor working for him. But he's married. He's
perfect.
Married, though. Like you said, if
yes.
he's not married, he's married.
We're not pushing judgment past anybody. But, yes, geographically speaking, it would work out.
Let me put it this way.
If perhaps down
the
line.
I think if we had a Big Blue Kickoff Live version of The Bachelorette, I think Kashawn would certainly be our first contestant.
Yes, whether or not she'd want to be on the show, though, after hearing from some of these characters.
Oh, absolutely not.
Seen. But, yes, she would probably be.
We would have to go down there, put like a sack over her head and knock her out and bring her up here. That's the only reason. She, the only way she'd be able to do it.
If that doesn't make it more exciting to join the show, I don't know what does. But
you'd have Stephen D.C. out there,
yes.
flexing his muscles.
There's
you had
a big
Shake
Maryland
showing
presence.
Up. It'll be
yeah.
great.
Oh, yeah. Getting back to the rankings here real quickly. As we
Charlie
to,
could be like the host.
Oh, boy. Charlie and hosting, I don't know necessarily if that meshes quite well. But we'll hear from him in a little bit later on. That's the
man.
Most tease I'm going to give Charlie. Way too much tease, by the way, in this program. You brought up the rankings. Listen, the media can crown whoever they want. At the end of the day, it's all about what you do on the field.
Exactly.
So it doesn't matter. Plus, also keep in mind, you know, the years that the Giants have actually done better is the years when they're underrated.
Right. And frankly, that was the point that Papa made on his show this morning, Lance. Why do power rankings matter when at the end of the day, your record is going to determine who the best team is? You know, this isn't college football where you're in the rankings to determine what bowl game you're going to play in.
It's not
this isn't, you know, the presidential race where your poll and your percentage in the votes is going to determine who becomes president,
how
who wins the nomination for the party.
So forth,
it doesn't matter. You're going to know after 4 months of football who is the best record. That's the best team. What people think about it in May is meaningless because in 4 months before the season even starts, who knows what injuries you're going to have, who's going to still be on the field, who's not.
How many people picked the Redskins to win the NFC East last season?
Nobody.
There you go. So,
in fact, in all our preview shows, we're like, well, we think the Cowboys, Eagles, and Giants will be in the mix, and the Redskins are probably the fourth team. How'd that work out? The only team over 500, close to being over 500 in the division, was the Redskins. And now everyone's sleeping on them. You don't think Redskins fans are pissed? They won the division last year. They're third.
They're not even considered the favorite.
They have them third in the NFC East.
And it's funny because I was having a conversation elsewhere. I said, you know, they're an underrated team all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know.
And they're bringing back a decent nucleus as well. So.
All right. Big Ed in Maryland. I haven't heard him in a while either. What's going on, Big Ed?
What's up, Big John?
How are you?
Lance Meadows.
How are we doing, Big Ed?
My boy.
We're good, Big Ed. How are you, pal?
Hey, guys. What's been happening? How y'all doing?
We're great, Big Ed. What's going on with you? What do you got for us today?
Hey, man, all I know is, like you said, it's May. For you to even consider anything serious is something seriously wrong with you. And I call that football, lack of football-itis.
And, you know, Big Ed, here's the thing, too. ESPN's hunting for clicks, dude. And by you guys getting upset about these things, you're letting ESPN win.
Never let them win. We're the winners.
Exactly.
We're going for number five. They're not. They got to broadcast this. That's all.
And by the way, they actually need to fill some broadcast seats over there with the bloodletting that's been happening up in Bristol with all these analysts being lopped off their pregame show.
You know what? Hey, look, if you want to talk about something, let's talk about Heath Shuler, man. Man, somebody get him off.
Wait, Trent Dilfer, you mean, right?
Man,
you mean
Trent Dilfer?
You mean Trent Dilfer?
Don Shuler?
No, he said Heath. No, no, he said Heath Shuler.
I thought he said Don Shuler.
Don't say nothing about us no more.
You mean?
Now, that's what I'm sitting here right there.
You mean Trent Dilfer, right?
He's not even listening. Don't even bother. Oh, Big Ed. No, you were cracking us up with the name drop in there. I think first I thought you said Don Shula. Then John said you bet you said Heath Shula.
Heath Shula.
Yeah, no, but you mean Trent Dilfer.
But you mean Trent
Dilfer.
He's from New England. He's still salty. You know what? He's still salty after the Super Bowl that we beat him in 42. That's why he do that.
Yeah, no, but
that's
you mean but Big Ed, you mean Trent Dilfer. That's who you mean. The Ravens quarterback.
No, I don't mean Trent Dilfer. I know Trent QB Baltimore. He beat us in 35. But I'm talking about Heath Shuler.
Heath Shuler's on ESPN? I didn't realize Heath Shuler was on ESPN.
I'm forgetting his last name.
Oh, you mean Heath, not Heath Miller. The former
the Saints
Steeler.
Fullback?
Yeah, the former Saints guy.
Yes, him.
On NFL
exactly.
Network.
Yeah.
Isn't that Heath Evans.
Heath Evans, there you go.
Yeah, that's it.
But he's on
whatever
a different
his name
network.
Is. Yeah. You don't deserve a name. You go down the Giants like you do. Right. I mean, I've never seen so much bad mouth.
Oh, man.
Like, hey, that's all you got to do. Well, the Giants are not going into the playoffs. The Giants aren't going to do this. Giants, hey, shut up. For all Giant Nation, shut up. Stop talking about our team like that.
Do you got anything else for us?
Knows, man. I tell you, minicamp, this is what everybody should be getting through. Just be healthy.
Crack up.
Know the plays, get to that book,
Great. Get
on it. It doesn't matter who we bring in. It matters what we put out. We draft good every year. I don't care. Everybody can get on Jerry Reese and talk about this. All this mess. Man, Jerry ain't do nothing but a good job, and I'm giving him props. He ain't do nothing but a good job for the last few years. The only problem is we just haven't been healthy. And then the game plan from the beginning of the season didn't get executed. Can't blame anybody, but who's right, who's wrong, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Thank you, Big Ed.
Hey, see you guys soon. Try to get up there for training camp because it's going to be serious this year. I see us really good, Nick, going good. We got a lot of prospects. I like that Keenan Robinson pickup. See what I mean? That was a big-time pickup. That guy can flat-out play some football.
All right, Big Ed. Thanks, pal. We got to run, man. I want to make sure I get Charlie before the end of the show.
Well, he scouts Keenan Robinson because he's down in his neck.
Oh, he does. He does.
So it's understandable. That's why he's excited.
All right, Charlie. You warned me this was coming on Twitter. Now, here's my question, Charlie. Have you talked to anybody else since the draft? Have you called into the show at all or no?
The show? I don't think – no, I haven't called into BBK.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you for not doing that. Appreciate it.
But, hey, I just want to say, John, you know, I caught ESPN – when they were announcing Monday Night Football, and I thought it was you. I saw the bald head. And I said, man, John's got the gig. That is incredible.
You know, I'll tell you what, Charlie, that he is one of my doppelgangers. I have a couple doppelgangers out there.
McDonough
is one of them. No
yeah,
question
exactly.
about it.
Yes. Just, Charlie, notice how you're avoiding the question that Schmuck asked you, though. You know, you just breezed right by it.
What question?
He didn't, you asked him if he called in.
No, he said no.
Well, but he was very vague in his answer. and now we're giving you an opportunity to give your dissertation here, and
okay,
you're beating around the bush.
Go.
Yes.
Here we go. On draft day, we picked an apple. We should have picked jackfruit. So let Jack.
He's been waiting forever to drop that line. Mister, we got a poet here in the house. Shakespeare. Thank you very much.
But to let Jack pass is unexcusable, inexcusable. I'll never forgive Jerry Reese for doing that. But after that first run, and then even, you know, those bunch of things, intelligence failure on Jerry Reese's part, They didn't know what they were going to do. They scrambled. They reached. They got an apple. I hope the kid is good. You know, I hope he works out. But to let Jack go is, to me, is inexcusable. But second through the sixth round, he got better. Shepard was a great pick. I think he was the best pick. I wanted him to pick Shepard, and he did. So I was happy with that. But he's not finished. He is incomplete. I can't give him a grade because he's incomplete. Because the right side of our line needs desperate help. Now, there's a 400-pound tight end right tackle who played for Baylor.
I heard about this guy.
Not drafted.
I heard about that guy.
Dude is incredible. Why not bring this guy in? Actually, he could play right guard and right tackle, and we could actually use another wide receiver, and you'd go five wide receivers. This guy could block two guys. Why doesn't he bring him in? There's our answer for the right side of our line.
Charlie,
you can't just put a big fat guy out there and think he's going to block people.
He's not a fat guy. This guy can run.
No, time out. He might be able to run. If you're 400 pounds, you're fat. I don't care how fast you go. If you're 400 pounds, you're fat. Period.
This dude is incredible. You've seen his video package?
Yes, but Charlie, let me ask you this. If he wasn't drafted, and if every team passed on him through seven rounds, don't you think there's a reason?
And didn't sign him as an undrafted free agent.
I tell you the reason is
he's fat.
People are dumb. No.
So every GM now in the NFL.
This guy's a freak. Bring in freaks. I mean, this guy could – you can imagine this guy, he could play fullback. Play tight end. He can catch.
Maybe you can make him the backup quarterback, Charlie. What do you think about that?
He can throw the ball 90 yards down the field. I mean, I don't know about that. But I'm saying, bring a guy like that in.
Man.
We need to fix the right side of our line. And if we don't do that, then Jerry Reese has failed, in my opinion, this whole draft season and free agency. But there's still hope. There's still time. Not much. But we're getting down to the nitty gritty here. So I hope something happens soon. And that's all I got. I'll let you guys go to lunch. And,
I appreciate that. We're hungry.
Very nice of you, Charlie.
It's quesadilla day today.
Charlie, look it out for us.
Hey,
yeah.
I didn't know Papa did a phone call. I'll have to start calling him up.
Oh, yeah, Bob Papa phone calls every morning on Sirius NFL Radio.
Just warn him.
We'll definitely warn him.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right, guys.
Charlie, actually, about 25% of this phone call was logical. That's a big step up for him.
Yeah, well, he's big at baby steps.
Oh, yeah.
Huge steps, I wouldn't necessarily label it as.
When he starts approaching 50%, we can take him off his medication.
We'll give
him.
Listen, his argument about Miles Jack, laundry list of medication. That pharmacy, he's keeping in business up there in Portland, Maine. But his point.
Something tells me he's self-medicated with his Anika and all that other crap up there.
That's a bad oversight on my part. You're right. Mr. Anika, right?
Exactly.
You know, he's wiping all types of potions all over.
He's like cutting the mushrooms in the forest and using those, right?
He's got his grass, in the backyard. Yeah. He throws everything.
He's got the garden.
Yeah, you need an ailment, don't worry. Yeah, come
exactly,
back.
Exactly.
But, the point about Miles Jack versus Eli Apple.
Oh, man.
You know, Charlie may get excited over Miles Jack, and I'm sure a lot of people were. But, if Miles Jack, if he only gives you 1 or 2 years, and obviously we can't have this conversation now, but, you're going to go back to that draft and you can say, was it really worth taking our 10th overall pick with him?
Every team passed on him in the first round. Every team. And then some teams passed on him twice. The Cowboys picked a guy with no nerve in his leg instead of picking Miles Jack. Yeah, look, that guy can barely bend his foot because his knees, his nerve shot. And you heard Mickey Spagnuolo. He said they have more faith
in
Jalen Smith's nerve refiring, which frankly is an act of God. There's no way to project that than Miles Jack's cartilage not falling apart. So it's not just the Giants that had questions about that, Nate. It's not. And frankly, if he was there when the Giants picked him in the second round, I don't know if they pick him over Sterling Shepard. I have no idea. He might have been off there born in the second round, too. Maybe he was a third or a fourth round pick, or maybe a fifth. Who knows? I don't know.
What good are draft picks if they can't get on the field?
And with all the injury problems the Giants have had, I mean, I get why they'd be leery.
Yeah, completely understandable. It goes back to that risk-reward conversation that John Maron Company had with the media right after the season. It's understandable.
Our producer Dave Dominic's hankering for some quesadillas over there.
Yes.
So we're going to say goodbye.
Just when you mentioned,
he was like,
Charlie got him really
like,
excited about lunch. And
quesadillas.
Then, yes.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmoll. God, it's good to be back. I'm with the Tino tomorrow. We'll try
my
to get Dave's.
By the way.
Thank you.
Yes.
I appreciate that. We'll have Dave Spadaro from PhiladelphiaEagles.com, and then on Friday, I think it's you and Needed Feagles.
Yes.
And they'll try to get Larry Michael on from the Redskins. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmoll. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you on Giants.com later on.
Have a good one.